السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.
أبو عامر هاوي.
نعم، طيب الحمد لله.
ويبيك ليك ليك.
Yes, I think I was waiting for Abu Yusuf to start the meeting, but I guess he has some issues. So I'll try to start.
Okay, sure.
Okay, listen.
ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. Today, inshallah, we will continue with our book, Al-Adab al-Mufrad, by Al-Imam al-Bukhari, rahimahullah. And we had been on this book. We read about our parents, our families, and then issues regarding the children. Thereafter, we studied matters regarding our neighbors, and thereafter we also studied the matters regarding orphans. Our last discourses on this book, Al-Adab al-Mufrad by Al-Imam al-Bukhari, were on the orphans. And the last issue specifically that we discussed regarding the orphans and kids generally is what he titled, rahimahullah, as Adab al-Yatim, the manners as far as disciplining the child, the orphan is. And then he, rahimahullah, narrated the answer from our mother Aisha, radiallahu anha, when she said that, inni la'adribu al-yatim hatta yanbasit, I would discipline the orphan. I would beat the hot orphan, hatta yanbasit, until he becomes soft, until she comes on the ground, until she becomes soft. Yeah, give them some discipline. And then we read some of what the scholars have said in the past about beating children for the purpose of discipline and the conditions regarding that. Today we shall be, or we should be, starting the discourses about Fadlu man mata lahul walad. Babu Fadli man mata lahul walad. The chapter about man mata lahul walad. A parent who has children passing away, a man has his children dying. What are the matters regarding the parent? What have the Quran and the Sunnah said about a male or a female, a man, a father or the mother who has children passing away? He has a child, the child passed away, or passes away, then another child passes away, then another child passes away, and so on. These are from the matters that happen to us as human beings. It's either the father passes away and the child becomes a yatim, or the child passes away and leaves the father behind with the mother. So definitely after discussing the matters regarding a man who passes away and leaves his children, Al-Imam al-Bukhari, rahimahullah, followed these issues with the issues about how about when it is the child that passes away? What does the parent for that child, what do they gain? If it happens that it is the parent that passes away, the child becomes yatim. We mentioned the virtues of caring for the yatama. We mentioned the virtues of caring for the widows. We mentioned what does the widow stand to gain when she cares for her yeti or yatama. So that is when it is the parent that passes away. How about the situation where it is the child that passes away, or it is the children who pass away? What are the things of benefit in the Sharia that are meant for such parents? So that was why Imam Bukhari placed that under the chapter heading, Babu Fadli Man Mata Lahu, Man Mata Lahu Al-Walad. But I just feel a few moments ago that we should rather start this chapter in Allah tomorrow. Now what we should do today is to take the questions regarding some of the issues that would have happened to us during the first 10 days of the Hijjah and during the last 3 days of Ayyam al-Tashriq, which ended in the evening yesterday, that we could take questions regarding some of the matters that happened to each of us at the time. Because many of us, so many things would have happened within that time. For example, where we observed Salatul Eid. Salatul Eid was observed something far away from 9 o'clock in the morning. It was observed far away, a bit after 10 o'clock in the morning. Is it right? Is it the right thing to do? Yes, we have observed Salatul Eid. Bismillah, we have the rewards of Salatul Eid. But should we have observed that Salah that late? Some of the people might be slaughtering the ram, and then the knife does not cut the animal as they think. They had thought that the knife was sharp. And then they found out that during use, the knife wasn't sharp. Could they have used another knife? Could they just easily take up another knife and then end the slaughtering of the animal? Sometimes the animal might have been properly slaughtered. And then when you leave the animal to rest, as it passes away, the animal just starts up again. What will you do? So there are so many, you know, issues that would have come up during the time when we had the Eid and the days of Ayyam al-Tashriq yesterday, the day before, and the day before that, when we had Ayyam al-Tashriq. I'm sure there would have been issues, questions that would have been asked regarding these matters. So I felt, inshallah, that perhaps we should address those questions today and make the class today a very, very light one, inshallah. And then we go back to our book tomorrow morning with the issues regarding the parents who, when they have their children pass away, a child passes away, two children pass away, three pass away. What are the rewards? What are the things of virtue that these parents will gain when children pass away? Just like we read the things of virtue, children and the widow will benefit when the man passes away. How about when the child passes away? What are the virtues for that? Bismillah, we'll come back to that in our classes tomorrow. But today, I think we should make the class a very light one, bismillah. We can obtain questions from our brothers and our sisters, inshallah, today for the class this morning. If we have some already, Abu Amir, can we begin to look at them?
I think Abu Yusuf is online. I don't know if he wants to take over. Abu Yusuf. All right, so I'm waiting for questions. Waiting for questions. We don't have any yet.
Okay. There's a question that came up here.
Okay.
Regarding a woman who who slaughtered Othriah. She plaited her hair 2 days before the Eid, and she made Othriah. Does she have to make a kafara if a woman was to slaughter the animal on the day of Eid, and she plaited her hair 2 days before the Eid? Does she need to make kafara? There are about three questions under this. The first issue is the lawfulness that a woman can plait her hair or comb the hair. Even men, yes, we are prohibited, as the hadith of Umm Salama radiallahu anha that we dwelled upon in the last classes, that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had prohibited anyone who wanted to slaughter the Udhiyah on the day of Eid, not to remove anything from hair or from our fingernails or from any other part of the body. Yes, that ruling exists, and it is because of that ruling that this question is arising. So the first issue is that, yes, aside that hadith, or despite that hadith does not prohibit us from combing our hairs or combing our beard or plaiting the hair, as the case may be, for the woman, because these procedures are not essentially procedures to remove our hairs. When we comb the hair, we don't intend to remove our hairs. When we comb the hair, we don't intend to remove our hairs, even though the hairs can fall off. Even though the hairs may fall off, we don't intend to remove the hairs. Likewise, when a woman plaits her hair, the intention essentially is not to remove the hair, it's to plait the hair, it's to weave the hair. That's the intention. So if in the process of doing that, the hair falls off when not removed, such an action has not violated the report not to remove anything from our hairs and from our fingernails. So plaiting the hair or combing the hair and then leading to the hairs falling off, or that someone has the fingernails breaking, you didn't intend to cut the fingernails. The fingernail just got broken. So this also does not fall in the violation of that hadith. Now, how about the one who deliberately shaves the head or cuts the fingernails? They are in two forms. The one who does that out of forgetfulness, and the one who did that remembering the hadith and is still violates that. What will that person do? If it is out of forgetfulness, there is no kafara also. All the person needs to do is to ask for Allah's forgiveness for forgetting, even though the person has not committed a sin. The difference between the one who does it out of forgetfulness and the one who deliberately does it out of nonchalance is that the one who forgets is not recorded to have committed a sin. But the one who deliberately does it out of negligence will be recorded to have committed a sin, even though all he needs is to ask for Allah's forgiveness over that sin. So the same thing applies if a woman was combing her hair or plaiting the hair just for the purpose of being able to dress normally and comb the hair normally. This is not blameworthy if it happens in that process that the hairs fall off. There's no blame in that business. But as for the one who does it deliberately, yes, he removes the fingernails and then remembers that, I was not supposed to do this. All you need to do is to ask for Allah's forgiveness and do other good deeds in the place of that shortcoming. But as for the one who deliberately, knowingly, and out of negligence does it, sin is recorded for him, and he really needs to ask for Allah's forgiveness for him to earn the forgiveness. But as for a kafara, atonement for that, the ulama say there is no atonement when that happens. Their case is likened to the case of the ahadith that have been mentioned about the companions who, in the time of the Messenger, they had their baths. They were still taking care of their bodies, despite the fact that they were in a state of ihram, and they were not, as a result, commanded to have to pay kafara even when hairs fall off them. So the same ruling applies in this kind of a case. There's no kafara, inshallah, if it happens to a woman that when she was splitting her hair, some hairs fell off. There's no kafara because she has not actually intended to do that. I hope that this response is clear. The person also asked that, will a woman also now need to comb? Yes, we answered about combing. You can comb the hairs during those first 10 days of the Hijjah. Allahu A'lam. If we have other questions that have been set in them, we can read them, inshallah. Abu Yusuf or Abu Amir.
Yes, so we have a couple of questions here. This one reads and says, what is the reign on someone that killed a peacock for his son on the day of Eid al-Adha? Does he have the reward for slaughtering him for Eid as well?
He does not have the reward for Eid if he has not intended Eid. The slaughtering of Eid is a different slaughtering and a different worship. Just like the slaughtering for Akiko is a different worship entirely. So if you are slaughtering for Akiko, your intention is for Akiko, then you have done Akiko, not Eid. They are completely different worship. Completely different worship. So if they happen on the same day, you would have done one of them. If it was a girl, then a ram for the girl, a ram for Eid. If it was a boy, two rams for the boy, and then a ram for the Eid is the appropriate thing for you to do. If you have just slaughtered for Akiko, then you have not slaughtered for Eid. If you have slaughtered for Akiko, you have not slaughtered for Eid. If you have slaughtered for Eid, you have not slaughtered for Akiko. Different rulings guide these matters. Different rulings guide the matters of Eid. Here are the slaughterings of Eid and the slaughterings for Akiko. Even in Fiqh, they occur in different places. It's a Kitabul Akiko. It's a Kitabul Udhiya or Kitabul Adahi. They are completely different matters that are guided by completely different rulings. I hope that it is clear, Shah.
Yes, this other one reads, says, is it permissible to pray Eid at two different locations? To pray twice at two different locations?
That has not been reported from the early Muslims. What has been reported from them is Eid at a place. Neither has it been reported from the Messenger. Salatul Eid is just one salah. Observe the salah and go away back home. Except in a situation. It can occur in a situation under a general text. For example, a person observes his Eid in Eid ground A, and his family, maybe his wives, observe Eid for one reason or the other at Eid ground B. He finishes, he gets home. Oh, the women are not back. He needs to pick them at Eid ground B and get there and find the people praying. He should pray with them, because the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam prohibited someone who is in the vicinity of the people praying, and then he stays away from the people. Maybe in this kind of a circumstance, it can happen that the man can join the people to observe that salah. But with the purpose of observing two Eids, no, you cannot observe two Eids. But it can happen that you pray on two Eid grounds. I hope that the difference and the connection between these issues are understood. You cannot observe two Eids, but it can happen that you pray in two Eid grounds. I hope that that matter is clear, Abu Amir.
Is that more? This one reads, is it permissible to pray Eid very early in the morning?
The time for Salatul Eid is from the time that we can observe Salatul Duha. The time for Salatul Eid is the time from when we can observe Salatul Duha, when the sun rises. it has risen. When the sun rises, it has gone off the horizon. That is the time for Salah to Al-Eid, just as it is earliest time for Salah to Duha. When it goes and the rays, first rays of the sun began to the scene, and the sun begins to emit and release the first set of clear rays. We can see, oh, the sun is up. That is the time we can start observing Salatul Duha, and that is the time we can start observing Salatul Eid. It is not proper to delay Salatul Eid up to times like 10 o'clock. The Salah is valid, even up to times like 9 a.m., as is in the past Eid we just observed 5 days ago or 4 days ago. It is not lawful. It is not appropriate. Yes, the Eid is valid, but it is not the Sunnah. We remember the hadith of Abdullah ibn Busri, that Al-Imam al-Bukhari, that Al-Imam Ahmad, that Al-Imam Ahmad mentions in his Musnad. It also calls the Sunnah Abi Dawud. He criticized those who led the Eid and told them that you have delayed the Eid. At this time, the time of the Messenger, we had already prayed and gone home. Delaying the Eid is not appropriate, even though he also observed that Eid with them, meaning that the Eid is valid, even though a better thing should have been done. So the correct thing is to observe the Eid earlier. And Eid al-Fitr is to be a bit delayed so that it will give the people the opportunity to observe their Zakatul Fitr, while Eid al-Adha should be more observed at the earlier times, so that the people would have the time to quickly return and get busy with their animals. Unfortunately, Eid al-Adha in our own community is usually delayed, and that is not appropriate. So back to the question directly, is that the earliest time to observe Salatul Eid is the earliest, the early times for Salatul Duha also. Just watch the time for Salatul Duha. Those are from the time you can start observing Salatul Eid. I hope that it is clear.
Another question says, the takbirat, are they meant to be done in congregation during Ayyam al-Tashriq?
Let's start with the takbirat of Salatul Eid Aba Amir. The takbirat of Salatul Eid, I found out that at the praying ground, the takbirat of the Salah itself, the first 7 and the 5 in the second rak'ah, many of the people were observing it together with a single tune, and that is not correct. The appropriate thing is that everybody observes his own takbir. When the Imam says Allah, just like we make in Takbiratul Ihram, we don't all make Takbiratul Ihram together, and it is not appropriate, correct. It is not correct for us to observe Takbiratul Ihram together. It is something everybody should do. The same thing applies to those Takbirats, the 7 after Takbiratul Ihram and the 5 after Takbiratul Intiqal in the second rak'ah. Everybody should make his own Takbir. But I observed that at the Eid, the people were all observing those takbirats together as if the Imam would lead them in saying Allahu Akbar, and you hear everybody jointly saying Allahu Akbar. The Imam says Allahu Akbar. You hear everybody saying Allahu Akbar. Together, this is not appropriate. Everybody should rather have made their own takbir alone, different from the takbir of others. Just make your own takbir. Just make your own takbir. Just make your own takbir. The same thing applies to the takbirat before the salah and after the salah. You observe that perhaps in some of the praying grounds, someone picks a microphone and begins to say those takbirat. If it is in a place where the people are largely ignorant, such that they don't even know how to recite takbir, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Walillahi alhamd, which I think is far remote and far-fetched, that we'll find a community where the individuals in that community will not be able to say this takbirat. it is remote. But in case it happens, one person can recite it while the others follow him in their recitation. He can pick up the microphone and say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And the entirety of those people who don't know how to do it can recite after him. In Kitab al-Adhkar of Al-Imam al-Nawawi, he cited a statement regarding this from Al-Imam al-Shafi, that the people can recite a zikr together with a person leading them in that zikr if the rest of the people do not know that zikr. That statement is ascribed to Al-Imam al-Shafi, that he has mentioned that, yes, people can make adhkar like that when the people don't know. But of course, what about when the people all know it? So if the head person picks the microphone and reads it in the praying ground, it's just by way of reminding all of us of what we are doing. And what he is doing is that he is reciting his own takbirat. So we all should recite our own takbirat, irrespective of the person using the microphone. So the fact that he's using the microphone is not any reason for us to now start reciting those adhkar. Everybody is reciting it with a single voice. This is wrong. The scholars usually also mention this regarding the talbiyah of Hajj. Labbaik Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik. Ulama mentioned that one of the innovations connected to that during Hajj or Umrah is that the pilgrims in a single vehicle or in a single group, you find them reciting it with a single voice. And this is not appropriate. The appropriate thing is that everybody should say his own. And that was what Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari reported in the talbiyah. And that's why some of the companions, we are not saying this talbiyah that we know. Some of them, we are saying other forms of talbiyah. Some we are saying Allahu Akbar. Some we are saying La ilaha illallah, especially regarding Eid. So the takbirat of Eid, whether during Salah or outside Salah, should be something that is individual. Everybody saying his own, everybody saying her own, except in the circumstance where the people are largely ignorant. They don't know how to recite these takbirat. Then in that circumstance, one person can lead while others follow him. I hope that it is clear, inshallah.
Another question is, Assalamu alaikum, sir. Hope you enjoyed your Eid. Should we also say the takbir after Salatul Jummah?
Well, I have not heard any of the scholars mentioning a difference between Salatul Jummah and perhaps Salatul Zuhur. You know, because from the Sunan of the takbirat al-Muqayyada, the takbirat that are starting from Yawm Arafah, we should recite them up on to the days of At-Tashriq, the first 3 days, the 3 days of Ayyam At-Tashriq. We should recite those takbirat too. They refer to them as At-Takbirul Muqayyad or At-Takbiratul Muqayyada, from the day of Arafat to the last day of Ayyam At-Tashriq. These are takbirat that we should say after Salah too. We should say them after Salah. So the question is, should we say them after Salah to Jumu'ah too? And I'm saying that I have not heard any of the scholars exempting Salah to Jumu'ah. So the way we have said them for the rest of the Salawat, it is lawful for us to also say them after Salah to Jumu'ah, if Salah to Jumu'ah falls on the day of Eid or any of the days of At-Tashriq when we are supposed to be making those takbirat al-muqayyada.
Another one, this is, is it an opposition to the sunnah to make one's food here before the imam does this?
Yes, it's an opposition to the sunnah. If you observe, what I understand by that is, if you observe, you slaughter your animal, perhaps, before the Salah, because the Imam will make his own after Salah. If it is after Salah, after you have observed Salah, you have not opposed anything in the Sunnah, even if the Imam has not slaughtered his own. But if your question means that can I observe Udhiyah before Salah, then you cannot observe Udhiyah before Salah. If you do that, it is Lahmushat. the ahlika. It is just meat that you have slaughtered for your family if you observe Udhiyah before Salah. But if your slaughtering the Udhiyah is any time from after Salah, then that is lawful for you. Slaughtering Udhiyah any time after Salah, after you have observed the Salah. Of course, you would not have observed your Salah alone. You would have observed it behind an Imam. So you can, from any time after Salah. How about when after Salah the Imam is giving the khutbah? Can we slaughter our animals? Yes, we can slaughter our animals. Because the Prophet ﷺ connected the slaughtering of animals to the Salah. He did not connect it to the khutbah. And he allowed the people to go home. It was allowed. You can go home after Salah without listening to the khutbah. You can go home after Salah without listening to the khutbah. Because the khutbah of Eid is mustahab. The khutbah of Eid, listening to the khutbah of Eid, Sama'ul khutbah yawm al-Eid, is mustahab. That listening, sitting down to listen is mustahab. So people can go. During the khutbah, you may whisper something to some of the people because it is not like the khutbah of yawm al-Jum'ah. They don't have the same rule. The khutbah of Jum'ah is wajibah, but the khutbah of Eid is mustahabba, is manduba. So you don't have to wait. So if we are allowed to leave the Eid ground immediately after Salah, then slaughtering immediately after Salah is lawful. That is, aside the fact that slaughtering is connected to the Salah. So, but if the Imam would delay, sometimes some a'imma in some places will make khutbah before Salah. This is an innovation. So that one is not lawful. So anyway, the issue is, any time from after Salah, then it is lawful for us to make our slaughter, even if the Imam may not have slaughtered his own animal. Well, if that question for whatever reason implies that before Salah, then that is not lawful. I hope that that explanation is clear for us.
Yes, it is. Jazakum Allah khairan. Yes, another question here is, if a cow was properly slaughtered and yet still making sounds almost about to stand, is it committing zulm to the animal?
No, it is not. If the animal had been properly slaughtered, for one reason, out of struggling, it stands up again. Just pick up the animal, check again if it's been properly slaughtered. If the person who slaughtered, oh, I had slaughtered it properly, and the animal stands up. When I was far younger than this, I have seen an animal running after slaughtered. It stood up and was running. It was grabbed, brought on the ground, and slaughtered again. So if the slaughtering person caught the three things we mentioned in the class, I think, there are three things that make a slaughter on the issues of azab, on ahkam of zabhi, or zabiha. Three things. The first thing is that the two jugulars must be cut. The supplies of blood to the brain must be cut off. The second thing is the passage of wind must be cut. The third one is the passage of food must be cut. So you can count it as four if you consider the two supplies of blood as one, as two, and then the passage for wind, and then the passage for food. So you can slaughter these, the once you cut these three things or these four things, depending on how you count it, you have slaughtered the animal. Once you cut these four things using a sharp knife, you have slaughtered the animal. How about when you consider the knife sharp and you started the slaughter, you find that it's not sharp, you can obtain another one. You can just take another knife and then do the slaughter. You didn't intend to punish the animal. You didn't have any intent to punish the animal. So, and you're taking a second knife is also from the aspects of trying to find relief for the animal. So it's not unlawful to do that. If the animal stands up again, pick it, bring it on the ground again and check again. Perhaps there's something you have not caught. If there's something you have not caught out of an error, cut it again. Cut that thing that was left. All of these is not from the aspect of punishing the animal because none of that is intended. Allahu Alam.
Is that no offense?
I mean, one.
Okay, now this another question reads, the third day of Ayyamu Tashreeq fell on a Friday. So is it, was it, would it have been sufficient to observe Dhuhr in case of Jummah?
Naam.
The third day of Ayyamu Tashreeq fell on a Friday. Would it have been sufficient to observe Dhuhr in place of Jummah?
No, it's not sufficient. The ruling about the coincidence of Salatul Eid and Salatul Jummah is if Salatul Eid was observed on a day of Jummah. If you observe Eid, then it is the opportunity comes to you. You can choose to go for Jummah or just observe your Dhuhr. If Salatul Eid comes on the day of Jummah, but that Ayyamu Tashreeq, the days of eating and feasting and sharing the animals, distributing the animal, falls on the day of Jummah, it has not removed anything from the rulings of Jummah, because those days are not the days of Salatul Eid. If you had observed Salatul Eid, if you had observed Salatul Eid, then Jummah becomes optional. So that is, though, that is for those who have that leverage in the Sharia. The leverage for Salatul Jummah on the day of Eid is for those who have observed Salatul Eid. But just because Salatul Jummah falls on a day of Ayyamu Tashreeq, it does not remove the obligation of Salatul Eid. The Eid must be observed. Not to now say you want to replace it with Salatul Dhuhr. I hope that it is clear.
No, yes, sir. Another one reads, I think the same person that asked concerning the Apiko is asking, can I change my intention now that one ram was for Eid and the other was for Apiko? I still have the two rewards for slaughtering Eid and Apiko.
The Ibadah has been done. So you can't change the intention after it has been done. The intentions are before the actions are done. You can't change that now at this time. Is it clear?
No, that's not clear.
I mean, Abu Amir does a question here.
Okay.
He says, is it true that one of the Prophet's children, alayhi salatu wasalam, died during Eid al-Adha? People say that a lot. That was why Surah Al-Kawthar was revealed. By way of alayhi wa sallam to observe the salah because he was sad. These kinds of reports are baseless. These kinds of reports are baseless. The son of the Prophet Ibrahim passed away on a day. That day it was Kusufu Shams, eclipse that happened. If you remember the hadith on Salatul Kusuf, it was eclipse that happened the day Ibrahim died. And the Prophet said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that the eclipse has not happened because my son died. It's not connected. The death of the Prophet's child is not connected to Eid at all. What it is connected to was eclipse. It had not happened because of the death of anybody, nor the birth of anybody. The eclipse does not happen because of the death or birth of anybody. The Eid is not because of the birth or death of anybody. This is a Sharia. This is one that Allah has placed for us to follow. I hope that this is clear. It is not true in a single expression to say that the Eid was established or the slaughtering was established because the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had a child who passed away. Allahu Alam.
So this questioner, I think he's talking about an act that the Imam raises up his knife for the congregation after slaughtering the animal, and they all say Allahu Akbar. If we say it is bid'ah, hope we are not extremes.
What is that case?
I think the person is referring to an act where by the Imam raises, after slaughtering the animal, the Imam will raise up his knife and the congregation will shout Allahu Akbar. So is this bid'ah?
It is not sunnah. It is not sunnah. It's not found anywhere. It's an error from them. We can approach those kinds of persons and educate them that this is not from the sunnah. To raise the knife and then people start saying Allahu Akbar. If they intend closeness to Allah with that action, then it is an innovation. It is bid'ah. If it is something they just do, they don't even know what they intend. So we say they have made mukhalafa to sunnah. In any of the case, it is not sunnah, and it is they should approach those persons. The reason the question is about should we say it is bid'ah? I don't want us to always approach the people like you have done a bid'ah, you have done a bid'ah. These are people who are largely ignorant. They are largely ignorant. You have not followed the sunnah of the Messenger, alayhi salatu wasalam. Approaching them with the mindset of correcting them is more likely to make them change these things than approaching them with, look, you have done this, and then Allahu A'lam may not bring the results that we want. So it is not sunnah. It's not sunnah. We should follow the sunnah in cases like this. So except those ones we know that they like to oppose the sunnah. Make it clear to them, this is an innovation. When they deliberately like to oppose the sunnah, then we should not from quickly telling them that, hey, look, this is a bid'ah. Don't do it again. I am talking about the approach to the matter now. The approach to correcting the people now regarding these kinds of matters. Those people who did it, I mean. If it is someone that is likely to accept your correction, save him from that world because it may harden him. If you know that it will not harden him, it will help him change, then employ the word. Employ the word. See, this is a bid'ah. If it will help him understand the implications. Otherwise, you can be more gentle and lenient with him to say, oh, look, you have made mukhalafa of sunnah. You have contradicted the sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad. So not used to raise his knife, neither did the people used to say Allahu Akbar. So don't do it again. Stop it. I have the khatib of the Masjid Juma. He's a young person. He's the Baba-styled person who tries to like the sunnah. On the day of Juma, he raises his two hands up. The companion who was correcting the person who did that, what he said to that person was, Qabba you the yatain. May Allah bring the mean to those two hands that you have. The day of Juma on the khutbah. Because that is a generation of where no one was expected not to know the sunnah regarding that. So the one who contradicts it is with strong reproach because you are supposed to know it. This is a generation of knowledge. Well, here we're in a generation of ignorance. So you approach the man and educated him. Stop doing this. The companion used to say something very strong against the person who did it. He has stopped it now. Although even the second Friday that followed, he did it. I think it was out of forgetfulness. He was reminded. Now he has stopped it. He doesn't raise his hand up. And many of the people don't raise their hands up. Wahu al-Matlub. That is what we want. So when being gentle is required, be gentle. When being tough is required, be tough. I think that is the meaning of wisdom. When it's required, be gentle. When being tough is required, be tough. So it remains for you to remain in that circumstance. What is the best approach for you? Is it the approach of gentility, the approach of toughness and hardness? A lot of things will come into consideration. That the first approach is just always that approach of hardness. No. Allahu Akbar.
Jazakumullah khairan.
Ameen.
Don't worry. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, sir." When one misses a raka from Salat al-Eid, how would one repay the raka? Is it with the seven takbirat?
You stand up and pay it back. That is the one you have missed. What you miss is what you pay back. You pay the, you say those takbirat that you missed. You say those takbirat that you missed. If you missed the first rak'ah, you say those seven takbirat. Allahu Akbar. Abu Amir, can we stop here? Or you have one more question or two to read?
Okay, I have one here that I'm trying to understand. It says, "Assalamu alaikum. I learned and equally observed that during the second rak'ah of Eid prayer, the five takbir were said before going to ruku, not upon rising from sujood. Is this correct?"
It is not correct. The takbirat have been said in the wrong place. The takbirat should have been said when he rose from sujood before he begins to recite Suratul Fatiha. That is the place for that takbir. But what he has done also, the Salatul Eid is valid, inshallah.
Is that not fair?
I mean, can we stop here?
Bismillah,
we'll continue our classes fully with our book, Al-Adab al-Mufrad. We'll be starting from Hadith 143 tomorrow evening.
Inshallah.
سبحانك اللهم أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت أستغفرك وأتوب إليك. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.